philosophy of pregnancy, what would that be? Everyone who's ever lived is a result of pregnancy, if you will, but there's remarkably little written about it. We know a lot about the stages of fetal development, or what the mother might be expected to feel or experience at certain points. But what does it all mean? What wisdom is there waiting to be expressed? That's what I'm trying to find out in this series. And helping me is Karin Eglinton, coach and mentor at Intergifted. My name is Miriam van der Valk. In this third and last episode, we'll be talking around pregnancy as metaphor. In Socrates' terms, by the way, philosophical practice is a bit like midwifery. Some say his mother was a midwife. Today, for the pregnancy as metaphor, I'll just start by reading this thing from a book. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yes.
It's Eric Fromm in his To Have or To Be, I think it's called A Having or Being, something like that, who's discussing Meister Eckhart. And he says like this. So our being is the reality. And we'll just read this thinking about pregnancy and pregnancy as metaphor. So, our being is the reality, the spirit that moves us, the character that impels our behavior. In contrast, the deeds or opinions that are separated from our dynamic core have no reality. Being is life, activity, birth, renewal, outpouring, flowing out, productivity. In this sense, being is the opposite of having, of ego-boundness and egotism. Being, to Eckhart, means to be active in the classic sense of the productive expression of one's human powers, not in the modern sense of being busy. Activity to him means to go out of oneself, which he expresses in many word pictures. He calls it a process of boiling, of giving birth, something that flows and flows in itself and beyond itself. Sometimes he uses the symbol of running in order to indicate the active character. Run into peace. The man who is in the state of running, of continuous running into peace, is a heavenly man. He continually runs and moves and seeks peace in running. Isn't it beautiful?
Totally.
And he explicitly says giving birth, but also the boiling and the flowing and flowing in itself and beyond itself. Very nice. That's being. That's just to be means to become, to be active and productive. The idea that to be a person or whatever is that it's the idea that it's a stable state is, that would be the opposite of.
It's interesting, the distinction, because the distinction that's made in the text, it's not the activity of what we know as busyness.
So and it's not the deeds, you know, it's just the activity.
Which is, you know, I don't know, it's like when I try to picture that, what that feels like, and while I have maybe my own bodily sense of what that is, it's a little hard to imagine it in a collective scale, what we would be like if we were in that kind of activity versus busyness activity.
I for me the bodily sense would be more like it's a kind of breathing or or this like this pulsation thing maybe.
There are things that are occurring and they're not willed by the ego.
Exactly, and it's also it's something that connects space and precision to time. Time has been so highly interesting to me during the pregnancy and now again. I've been thinking so much about time. I think ever since I got pregnant, I'm not even sure I made the connection till yesterday.
But, interesting.
I know. Yeah. And I talked to my boss, my best friend at work, in fact. And I asked her, so how are you? What's happened? And she goes, well, nothing really. It's the same. It's been 3 weeks.
me, I'm witnessing this lifetime that has, you know, in my, just next to me, a life has begun. And it's a life I haven't seen my boss in a lifetime, you know, even though it's not my lifetime, but
Yeah, I'm sure it's just like an altered state of consciousness.
It must be, must be.
Well, I tell people all the time that my sense of time is not like what I understand normal sense of time to be like. My sense of time is really extended. So for me, 3 weeks is a lifetime every time.
Yeah, at least some 3 weeks. Like I remember other 3 week periods, but that's not every 3 week. But it's certainly a lot. It's that's another thing about the that I've been thinking about the that we say, do you have time, or like what are you going to fill your time with?
Mm.
It's a very interesting idea that we all have time. You know,
as though time is actually space.
Yeah. Yes. And it's elsewhere. Like you can yeah. gather it, maybe you can collect like, time.
Like you have a storage room.
Yeah, exactly.
With your time. And you can fill it with things.
Yes. What do you fill your time with?
Yeah.
It's a very good question, because we don't know how much time we have in its one perspective, but in another from another way, we all have exactly 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So if you break it down like that, you can possibly talk about what you fill your hours with or something.
True.
Yeah.
And how many cycles of activity in this Meister Eckhart sense we have one day is not the same for everybody.
No, it isn't. No.
We're going to have to do a podcast about time. I can see it in our future.
Yeah, good. In the future? Perfect. Perfect wording.
Yes. yeah, so the parallel between this and pregnancy that I see from what you've read is that there is a whole world, a whole life, like you're saying, of activity happening in the body, in the baby. I mean, they're experiencing who knows what incredible psychological experiences in there. And that all occurs of its own accord in a way.
Yeah. And I'm witnessing it. It's my job to see it happen and to see these. You know, we've also been talking about dreams and the mind and when it all starts, when personhood sort of comes about,
yeah,
and the memory or hearing, memory of hearing, mm-hmm. happens before you have ears. Mm. Oh, I'm having this wonderful experience of the sort of the grid of reality. It's just sort of appearing in my. I'm standing in the middle of it now.
Oh. I love it. I love it. When I was thinking about our conversation today and thinking of the pregnancy as metaphor, what comes to me, I guess it's to me the most obvious. I don't know if this is obvious for everybody, but to me, this is the most obvious connection.
Mm.
And that is thinking about the creative process as pregnancy.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. And not giving birth prematurely.
For example,
yeah,
and knowing what stage you're in might help you to respond adequately to your creative process.
Exactly, to nourish yourself in the appropriate way. Yeah,
precisely. Mm. And for me personally, like my personal connection, one time a teacher made this connection for me and reflected to me how my approach was more like engineering than birthing.
Okay.
And so in the creative process, my approach, and I'm sure many people have this as well, it's the assembly of parts, is the design, is the pre-planned. I know what the product is going to be. I have a clear, you know, I have clear drawings, I have clear images, a clear plan, and then I assemble all these parts together. And this kind of approach, the engineering approach, has a perfectly valid place.
Mm.
And at the same time, what this person was sort of teaching me was that I was missing out on this other dimension, which was the pregnancy dimension, in which you be instead of do.
Yes. This is, I think this is so hard to just be.
Yeah. Which made it very enriching for me to take a lot of time to sit with this and understand and approach everything that was blocking me from seeing that side of the process, you know, the fears, the need for control, etc.
Mm.
And simply just that I didn't have any role models that had shown me what it's like to create from this place of almost like sitting and relaxing and allowing the process to take over. Mm. And so since then, I've become sort of very aware of that and try to pay much attention to and allow this. And that's the thing, you know, it requires an allowing. It's like you have to give it permission to take over.
Mm. Yeah. I'm in the same place, actually, just since not very long at all. If I'm writing a text to leave it in my head, I go for a walk and I sort of write it. And like the other day, I was writing a whole text almost when I came back from my walk and I'm like, I have no memory of being in that place or that place. And, you know, I just walked it was just the movement that made the but if I start to take notes too early, it would be nothing. And this is how I tried to work all through my university years. You know, I could spend 10-11 hours in front of the computer trying to sort of ache out text instead of just waiting till it's done.
So relate.
Yeah, it's such a relief to get to this stage. And it's a very good, it's exactly what pregnancy is like, because there is no way you can push the fast forward button, you know. You have to wait. Waiting, you know, waiting is, waiting in patience, and all of this has to do with time too. I'm looking forward to the next podcast. Time is now.
and that's like I'm saying, it's been the same for me, so it's very cool that you also have experienced that and to hear, you know, another person's perspective on that. What I've also noticed about that process of allowing the creativity to take its own course and to trust it is, we said this in one of the other podcasts, the trust that feels almost like blind trust. The outcome to me, or the reward at the end, has been to recognize that there's always a piece that I didn't expect.
Mm.
Something more than what I could have assembled in my engineering approach.
Yes. I was just going to say, you know, I'm never caught. Yeah.
It's a wonderful parallel to pregnancy. You know, you can't assemble a baby.
Yeah.
It's alive.
And you don't really know what it is or who it is or what it'll look like. You can have your idea, but it, at least it's like that for me. I like you said, you have a clear vision of what you want to do, and I do that too very often, and I make these drawings of, for instance, if I'm sewing something, but it never, especially when I'm sewing something, it never quite turns out how I thought. But it isn't bad anymore. It wasn't the beginning when I had, because I'm self-taught, so in the beginning I was very disappointed when it didn't turn out like I wanted. But now I'm sort of, it's an element of nice surprise. I'm like, how will this feel, you know?
It's like there's to me it's like it's taught me humility in a way. There's a something there that has a mind of its own. I don't know what it is. And in this I'm also like, I mean, I experienced this before I encountered Elizabeth Gilbert's work. She writes a lot on creativity. But I was very pleasantly surprised when I read her book Big Magic, and she talks about the creative spirit or the creative force or the muses or whatever. And they have a mind of their own, and they want to partner with the creator or the artist. and they have the ideas, and then the creator is just sort of blindly, you know, going through the motions until the muse bestows an idea upon them or something. That there's a partnership with something else, and so therefore again the ego is set aside for the pleasure of the process.
Oh, I love this. And it's also it also rhymes very well with I keep I keep saying and thinking that I want to let intuition have a bigger part in my work, in my career, in how I interact with other people.
Mm-mm.
And this is exactly the opposite of wanting to write the script and then direct the scene all the time.
Yeah.
Which is what the often happens when you end up in this sort of the ego space. At least it does for me, you know. I really wanted to. I've noticed in myself these tendencies that I get very frustrated and nervous if I'm not completely in control, or things don't happen the way I thought, And it's so wonderful to not have to suffer like that anymore, because it's suffering, and it means that everything is a struggle all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's where the whole generalized idea of creative struggle, I mean, of course, there's a genuine aspect to it, like a justified struggle, but this idea of the tortured artist is also related to that, I can't control this, or I can't do it, you know, I can't succeed in my vision, or something like that.
Yeah, that and that, I think it was said about Oscar Wilde that he wrote his best things when he was very melancholy, and he didn't do anything when he was happy. So this but I think this is also when you're sort of waiting for the creative spark to come, because you can actually call on it, you know, you can set the stage for it so that it comes, instead of just going, I don't feel creative, I can't do anything. You can decide to be creative. And to attract the muses, you can say, I'm ready now, you can come. So I think the tortured artist has forgotten maybe that they can actually.
is that also a parallel to pregnancy, would you say? Because you can also, you know, get pregnant accidentally if you're not very careful, or, you know, if you're not very aware, there can be like. If there's a disregard for the way that the body works, and you can also intentionally become pregnant.
This is interesting and a bit odd. I mean, there are so many possible scenarios that it's difficult to...
Maybe it's a case-by-case scenario metaphor.
It's difficult to find the umbrella principle because too many things fit underneath. I think, maybe. I mean, I'm not really sure. It's I had these ponderings with a friend when we were very young, like in our 30s. No, I'm joking, like teens or something. And we were talking about that you know you get pregnant when you're ready. You know, these esoteric views on the matter. But I think we sort of left the idea anyway, because it doesn't it doesn't really work. Yeah.
No, certainly not. I mean, just in the practicality of, you know, there might be somebody very emotionally, psychologically ready, but their body can't get pregnant for whatever reason. And
it's very easy to find lots of examples.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be nice to have a very, you know, to be able to decipher something extremely outer worldly.
Well, at the same time, you know, since I mentioned Elizabeth Gilbert, and she also says, don't treat your creations as babies, because then they'll be too precious, and you will not want to let them out in the world, and she's just, you know, bringing the common sense view that they're not actually babies, and they can, you know, people can tear them apart, and it's going to be okay, because they're not children.
Okay, yeah. I was not the tearing apart bit, but this not wanting to let them out in the world thing. Maybe you shouldn't treat your babies as babies either, then.
Yeah, true. And so maybe the metaphor holds, where just that maybe our relationship with babies going out in the world is not great.
Yeah, we should talk about that too. You know, what do we mean by baby? What do we? I'm in the Swedish Society for Philosophical Practice in the Educational Board, which, you know, we are working with setting up a program in Sweden, etc. But now suddenly we have an email thread about what do we mean by, we started with someone saying, well, practice actually means a custom or a tradition. That's not really we mean actually practicing philosophy, like instead of just academy philosophy that's purely theoretical, armchair philosophy kind of thing.
Right,
we sort of live the philosophy. That's what we mean by philosophical practice. But the word makes it sound wrong after, you know, all these 15 years of using it. And then suddenly someone said, well, who is really a philosopher? Can you really call yourself a philosopher? So philosophical and so typical of our trade.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. Now we don't know what philosophy means and not what practice means. And yet we do philosophical practice. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you start questioning and then all of a sudden you don't know anymore.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Suddenly you have no idea what you're talking about. I like that though. It sort of keeps me on my toes in this life.
Yes, like every thought is a temporary scaffolding for the next one.
Yes, and it also means I'm not taking things for granted. I think about what I say. I want to be someone who is mindful of how I use words.
Even
though I often, even after I put these two previous podcasts, I'm suddenly remembering something that I said, and I'm thinking, gosh, that can be misunderstood in this way. And this can be...
Same here.
Yes. But then maybe that's the sort of don't treat our podcast as a baby either. We have to release it and not feel responsible in our heart of hearts for how it's received, because this is out of our control now.
Yeah. Isn't that also... I think the parallel still holds there with children. You know, once they're old enough at some point, they're not like... There are parents who treat their children as a reflection of themselves and therefore try to apply control when maybe they shouldn't.
Exactly. Like it's my child.
Yes. You know, whatever or trying to control the behavior so that it doesn't reflect badly on the parent.
But that's also because you see it as an extension of yourself. So whatever shameful behavior the child may do, so you're also carrying the shame for it.
Exactly.
It's a pity. But this is very difficult. Not doing that means that you have to have a thorough and working idea of what personhood is, and accepting that this baby is a person, or this child when it grows up is a person, its own person, with its own universe of thoughts and history and images and understandings of the world. And then respect that. I mean, it's a lot to ask.
Yeah, it's like a incredibly deep and all-consuming boot camp for self-development. I see it like that when I see parents, and I'm seeing how much you all have to work with. All the unexpected surprises, all the, what the world does, the projections of the world onto parents, onto children, and all that. There is, like, a lot to work with and work through.
Yeah. You said it. Yeah. Yeah, I have a friend who says it's hardcore CBT, cognitive behaviorist therapy.
Yeah.
You have to, for you face all your, you know, every time you get annoyed, all the things that you hate about, even the things that you swore you would never do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find yourself doing them, and then you have to both correct your mistake with your child, talk about it and explain why you did in very few words, because otherwise they'll lose interest.
Exactly.
And then you have to sort of deal with how you feel or how it made you feel about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very intense.
It is. Yeah. Wouldn't want to be without it, though. I think it's important, I think, for me as a person. I mean, it's already happening, so it was all...
I mean, for me, it's more like, I feel like, tipping my hat to you, offering a salute.
Ah.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked with parents for quite a while with kids with special needs. And seeing what everything that they had to go through, particularly with kids with special needs or TOE kids or, you know, what have you, it's like you're also having to deal with the medical profession a lot. You're having to deal with people's ideas of what they would do better, you know, things like that all the time as well. Mm. So I have incredible respect for parents.
Yes. Yeah.
So
I've got another quote here on also from Eric Fromm, and it's more about being as becoming. The position that being is a permanent, timeless, and unchangeable substance, and the opposite of becoming, the concept of process, activity, and movement as an element in being. Okay, that's basically what we already said, but I think it's very nice anyway. Even just in a very common sense way, the word being looks like it's stable and like a photograph.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm happy it isn't.
Yeah. That, like appreciating process and appreciating the movement. I guess that's where I see the activity aspect reflected again. Mm. Process and movement as being.
I like that too. I like movement. Mm. Movement. Like not in a straight line movement, but
yeah.
This constant movement. Even when you're it doesn't mean it's you have to constantly accelerate and go faster and faster and with a goal in sight, but you are this pulsating breath.
Yeah.
Life. This is life, you know. This is what it means to be. When you're not breathing, you are no longer. It's the not being.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I like that image.
And also the running to peace. It's very nice. Peace with E-A-C-E.
not falling apart.
Running to pieces.
Isn't that funny that it's so close?
Yes, it is.
Like, it's related. It's like you either run to peace or you run to pieces.
Yes, you pick one of them and pick pick the first one. And the vessel that grows... that's also very nice. That's filled and filled, and it never gets full. It becomes bigger so that to accommodate more. Oh, accommodation, there's that again. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear her.
Yes, you do. Yeah, her dad's here too, so I think she's fine.
Good.
They're doing something, maybe.
I like the vessel that grows image. I guess because you just said that, I'm connecting that to the image of it being life. So in a very, you know, personal way, I imagine that the more I grow, the more my life expands with me so that I will never reach the ends.
Yeah, it's like the expanding universe too.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
Mm. And the I have here the car analogy that...
I love that.
Yeah, when you sit in your car or when you drive a car, you use it to extend yourself and transmute your capabilities. You can go faster and you can go in a sort of protected way, very far and in remote places, or you can carry things with you, etc. And this is why did I put that there? I don't remember anymore. Do I think that pregnancy is like that? Oh, maybe. Yeah. So exactly. Pregnancy is also an extended state of self, you know, and transmuted state where you are more than you were before. And you are you're also going somewhere.
Yes. It's like the child is inside you, but it's also part of you.
Mm. And it's also... maybe it's also outside of you because it's a connection to the interpersonal grid, you know?
Yes. Mm. Yeah, so it's like inside is outside.
Mm. Nothing is what we thought.
I feel like I'm standing there now with you in that reality grid.
Yeah.
Oh, and picturing this.
Yes. It's a momentous peak experience.
Yes. I can feel it, and then I'm picturing the child is inside, but it is outside because it's not me. Mm-hmm. And I have this connection, this deep, you know, all-consuming heart and soul connection with this being that I am giving life to, but it is outside of me. So it takes me outside of myself. Mm-hmm. And there's this sort of rotating movement happening.
Oh, I have goosebumps. I'm almost tearing up. It's very nice. What a lovely, how lovely.
Yes. Oh, this is what I live for.
Yeah. The baby, I remember when we talked about this, the baby is steering me. That was your words, because I was saying that when I was very pregnant, I can't walk very fast, you know? Because,
right, yes, you remember that.
Yeah, so because it sort of started stretching very much or stretching out or pushing in a certain way, and I had to sort of stand up or wait a little bit or sit down for a bit, or I couldn't walk in my own pace because I like walking very fast. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit like the blind leading the blonde, because I am her eyes. I'm the one with the eyes in this physical world.
Yeah.
And she was sort of steering my movements and my pace from inside.
And even your needs, like having to go to the bathroom.
Yes. And having to eat, having to go to the bathroom. Yeah, totally. And this is in contrast to the normal ego need to know where I'm going. And suddenly I don't know where I'm going. Oh, that's another part of the car analogy then. I'm in extended transmuted state and I don't really know where I'm going. I know one thing, you know, I'll the baby will come out at a certain point, and I am this will happen. It has never been the case that you are pregnant forever, for instance.
Yeah. It's like this, you get to visit this temporary thing, place, state, way of being. And yet, when you come back to yourself, you come back with something else with that experience.
Mm.
Like, you know, being a mother changes you forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they say in the movie Lost in Translation. She asks him what being a parent is like, and he says, "Oh, that it's hard." but they turn out to be the most wonderful people you have ever met. That's like the only thing he says, and this is quite true. You see this funny little, and she makes these. She's 4 weeks now, and she already makes these lots of these funny faces, and you know, and they. They say it's because it's just practice, the facial muscles. But yeah. I know that there are glimpses of real consciousness in there. Have you seen Ponyo?
Yeah. I love that movie.
Me too. I love it. And you know how Ponyo turns back into this fish being? So this is what happens when she's hungry. She goes into the, you know. But then suddenly she comes out, and you can see it in her eyes. Of course you can. Yeah. They tried to tell me it's not real. Forget it. I know. Mm. I know it's real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah. I think the car analogy, one of the things that was there too was the piece about the person's consciousness starting to feel or projecting onto the car their own personhood. So, you know, the feeling that your personal space becomes actually around the car rather than inside the car.
Oh, yes. You can sort of tell the personality of the car. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't drive myself. Please don't mock me. But
I won't. I don't either.
Oh, wonderful. I love people who don't drive. Adults without driver's license. Oh, never mind. I thought I was the only one. No, not really. But I do bike a lot, and you can certainly become one with your bike, you know, when you know your bike, and you can, and it's very, suddenly you can drive it almost zero miles per hour.
Yeah,
and not fall off, you know, because it's very me. It It's a part of me. It's an extended part of me. Mm. Maybe you can tell. Maybe you can, if you have that sort of those energy tentacles, maybe you can feel the or see the owner of a bike just by looking at the bike.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's a very cool idea. So is this like, I seem to imagine several connections there when we talked about sort of taking, like in one of the past podcasts, the taking in.
Mm.
It's like there needs to be a taking in process for that extended self to happen. It's like I've taken, let's say, my bike or my cell phone or whatever thing that we start feeling as part of ourselves.
Mm.
And we swallow it inside ourselves.
Mm.
And then it becomes part of us. And then the extension, the actual object, becomes forever me.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And it also, it really puts together this wonderful paradox that we are always individuals and communitarian, if that's the right word. It makes so much sense to understand how it works, and yet these two words are mutually exclusive. So how can you both be an individual and part of some of another individual, like the separateness mm-hmm. and the connectedness, both? But it's always true. When we were in couples counseling, my ex-husband and I, the counselor once said, well, you must be, what did you say? She said something like Mrs. Paradox. That was my name. Mrs. Paradox.
Was that supposed to be flattering?
I'm not sure, but I took it as a huge compliment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wonder when somebody else would say that to me, I'm like, I'm not sure what you're saying. I have to explain to clients that because of lack of mirroring, they might have not had their full stages of development yet.
Mm. Mm. And this is asynchronous development, right?
Absolutely. And I sometimes wonder if the asynchronous development is built into us or whether it is a function of just not having the mirroring.
And here we have time again.
Yes. There it is. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm. Time and seasons, cycles.
Yeah. Oh, good. Ooh. I'm looking forward to talking about time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what you just said also, inside all of what you just said, there was a connection for me to the aspect of parental control or feeling that one's personhood is reflected in the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the child's been inside you and you yourself haven't had practice with your own stages of development,
mm-hmm.
it might be, you know, this merging together that occurred at the beginning might be very hard to let go of.
Mm. Yeah, depends on what you're if you're looking for someone to I'm sort of popular psychologizing a little bit now, but if you're looking for your friend, for someone who will truly understand you, this happens with some parents. They are looking for someone to truly understand them.
Yeah.
I also think I have somebody told me when I was pregnant with my big daughter, now you'll never be alone again or something like that.
Yikes.
Yeah, but this, which is, it's the long way to go about things. But it also is very true because we have these entanglements.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's also the aspect of the child, of course, wanting to be around, you know, like so many mothers I know are like, I can't even go to the bathroom by myself.
Mm.
So I'm sure there's an aspect of that mixed there, like just the practicality of the child needs to be with you,
mm.
but not as a replacement for community, which is what you just said before.
Mm.
It's like almost like in the individuality and the collective becoming so separated, then we no longer have this like healthy balance of both.
Mm. We are born prematurely, so we need extra, like the individual needs to still be, how do I put this now? I'm thinking about my little baby who is sleeping in this thing called baby nest. It's a cute thing that I had never heard of before, but we borrowed it from someone. And she's sleeping between me and my boyfriend in bed. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when she doesn't want to be on her own there. So yeah. Even though she's 30 centimeters away, she wants to be really close. She wants to be held.
Yeah.
And then she falls asleep. And this is nothing that we should try to work around or make her not want. No, we just hold her. That's how you do it, you know? And that's laying the groundwork for an easier individuality later. It sort of, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is common sense to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it is for many people, and it might be a surprise for others, or when we, you know, society transition to keeping babies away from their parents and so on, that became a paradigm.
Mm.
And people forgot.
Mm.
I have a feeling many people didn't forget, but just imagine that the experts were right.
Yeah, they tried to be dutiful and disciplined and do the right thing, and they were told what the right thing was.
Exactly.
Just like my mum with the cleaning the nipples before you breastfeed.
Exactly, yeah.
Insanity. Mm.
Yeah.
But I would do the same. And when I was pregnant, because there's this list that they ask you to download of things that you shouldn't eat when you're pregnant, for instance. And it changed in the last 10 years. So suddenly you are allowed to eat some things that you weren't allowed to eat then, and in my previous pregnancy. And I'm just listening blindly to the recommendations.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, of course.
I'm not going to not follow them. You know, that. So, and this is probably how they thought too. You know, they thought there was, it's important how it's connected to these state organizations that tell us what's good for us.
Oh, yeah. Well, which, you know, I never thought we actually would end up here. Pregnancy as a metaphor. But I see this really interesting convergence of pregnancy being a site where, you know, like a site of consciousness, mm-hmm. where instinct comes to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the woman, in whether it's in the birthing process, or in how she feels when she's pregnant, and how, you know, things are taking over for her, and therefore over the conscious self.
Mm.
And at the same time, all around in the life before she was pregnant, there is a established order with society.
Yeah.
And so then I imagine the instincts rising out of the body sort of to meet the societal structures, and then there will be like sites of conflict.
Yeah.
And I had never pictured this before. That it's like, because there's more instinctual activity, all of a sudden there is also more sites of friction, perhaps, or contact with the things around us that are not designed for instinct.
Mm, you're treated a little bit like a less autonomous person as a pregnant woman, which also shows in how people you don't really know feel that they can touch your belly.
I was going to ask you about that the other time. Did you get touched a lot?
No, not these days when I'm so old, 39 almost, I think I exude a sort of get off that I didn't have when I was 29, because then it did happen. But maybe people also changed. I don't know. Like, sometimes things happen quickly in society, and when it comes to these gender-based issues, Sweden is at the forefront, often at least. Or, yeah. You know, we tend to take the fights or whatever. Maybe people did that much less now. But I think my whole being just told them to back off.
Like, yeah. Get off. Yeah. Don't even think about it.
No, it's not happening. You're not touching my belly. It's still me. You know, I can actually feel your touch. It's not like my senses have removed themselves from the skin of my God. It's weird. You would never, ever do that to someone who is not pregnant.
Yeah, yeah. Which weaves itself in with that other aspect we had said about then all of a sudden there's a community watching you, watching out for you. And of course, it's not one-sided, and they might be watching out, but they also feel a little entitlement, or could feel a little entitlement.
Ah, the less autonomousness is actually to an extent quite true, because I need protection. If there was an avalanche or something, that I would need help to run away from it.
Yeah, yeah. You would definitely need to be carried there.
Yes. So, in a way, as a pregnant woman is less autonomous.
True. And it weaves itself full cycle with what we said also about respecting the sovereignty and the boundaries of the young child. And, you know, asking for permission before touching and so on. And that I think often when we, I'm just saying just a trend that I've observed, is when we perceive that somebody is less autonomous, we also tend to treat them like a child.
Yeah.
And therefore perhaps choose not to acknowledge boundaries and things like that, or are, become blind to those.
Like a child. That's in itself a metaphor.
Yeah.
Like a child. Where'd that go? No, I lost it now. Maybe we should do like an extra bonus bit for the things that we thought about in the coming 2 weeks that we wanted to change or add to. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I can see that developing into so many branches. Like,
yes.
Every time we do one, we'll be like, oh, let's do another one about this.
It'll be a forever. Every Monday for the coming 10 years, we'll do one on whatever happened the week before.
Yeah, what we ate for lunch and
or whatever we thought about in the previous podcast, I meant.
Yes.
Like, which is just what we were talking about, the product of the creativity, or product is a weird way of putting it, but that you don't quite know what it, the baby in the pregnancy, that you don't like the podcast baby of the podcast pregnancy. you don't know it I beforehand, it. And then, then you just have to deal with it.
Yeah, then you have something that's more than you bargained for, more than you imagined. And it has a life of its own and its own personality.
That's nice.
It is super nice. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I like being surprised. And like I said earlier, I think that there's a place and time for the engineering approach or the project approach to creativity. Of course, there are some times where you want to get what you know you need to get. It's a more technical approach and so on and so forth. And so for me, there's also a real joy in being surprised.
Me too. It's my favorite thing, to read something that I didn't know what the author would say. Like, it doesn't always happen. Some books are just very easy to read. And then suddenly I read these two books and I had no idea what they were going to say. It was wonderful.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I wonder, I think we discussed this in the intergifted community, that this can also be sort of a thing about being gifted, that things get very easy to predict after a few iterations.
It can also be something to do again. I bring up the same things all the time, but they're interesting. The individuality and separated yet connected part. That it's for books that came out in the 80s and 90s, it's like they have already been in this world for so long.
Yeah, you've already absorbed through the general knowledge that's already swimming out there.
Yeah.
All the concepts that have been,
the way people talk to each other, it's like, it's there. It's very interesting. They're very easy to read these days.
Yeah, I would attest to that for myself as well. And then I often also just read them in a workmanlike way so that I can have the primary source, but I don't necessarily savor them or delve deep into them or get to play with them.
Mm. Different ways to read, definitely. That's why I read so many books last year, I think. I mean, I'm writing them down nowadays because I figured after my last pregnancy, suddenly after a few years, or when she was maybe four or something, I figured I haven't read a book in a really, really long time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I decided to get this reading diary. So now I'm writing down all the books I read, and I even counted them because it's an incentive to be effective in a way, like to complete things. I like to complete things and start
things.
Yeah,
you get a gold star after each one.
Yeah, you get a little gold star. Yeah. yes.
Okay, so that's really interesting. I like what you just said ties back into me, for me to pregnancy in this really, really roundabout way.
Yeah, good. I like that.
Okay, so I study with the shamanic lineage for a very long time, and there is an archetype that is very central to this shamanic philosophy, and the archetypal womb space.
Okay.
You know, is very, very important in this philosophy, that this is the source of power, and that all of the you know, all of the creative energies of the universe can be envisioned as a womb space.
Oh.
And it's like I can even send you or share.
Yes, I was thinking I'm going to just ask you to send me all of these things.
Yeah, yeah. I will. Let me just make a note of that because otherwise I'm going to forget.
I'll ask you. I won't forget. It's come up three times now with different people. So it's in my line of pipeline.
Okay. So then I was thinking about this, you know, how in, you know, symbolic meaning has like all these layers. I'm thinking about like in the Golden Compass book, how when she reads this Golden Compass that has all these symbols, and every symbol has a level, and at every level it means something different. Are you familiar with this book?
No, but I get the concept.
Yeah, okay, good. And then this symbolic womb also has one of the levels of symbology of it is the level of completion. And the idea that when we take on creativity as, you know, as a pregnancy, there that we see the process through all the way to the end. That you can't, you know, and that it's like when it's done, it's done. It is done when it decides it's done, just like what happened with you and Naomi deciding to be born 3 weeks early.
Yeah.
And that, so there's this dual aspect. It knows how long it takes. It decides how long it takes, not you. But your job is to see it through to the very end. And so that the thing that you said, I like to have things completed. For me, it had this perfect resonance with this archetypal pregnancy that you see through to the very end. And that you allow it to dictate how long it takes, but you make sure that you do not abandon midway.
Maybe I am more motherly than I thought. I'm certainly not one of those who bakes buns and likes to have all the neighborhood kids in the kitchen. I'm not that person, but maybe I am more motherly than I thought.
Yeah, I guess it also expands the concept of motherhood to many other things that are not gendered.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm a philosopher. I never things always mean more than just the you know.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
There are three beginning conversations on a philosophy of pregnancy completed. Pregnancy, pregnant. Maybe that's an adjective to use more. I remember being told once that I had written a pregnant essay. I'm thinking about the seemingly paradoxical position of separateness and connectedness. Light, apparently, is both a particle and a wave. But that doesn't mean that wave is suddenly a synonym for particle. Maybe it's the same with us. Maybe it depends on who's looking. And maybe this is a starting point for a philosophy of subjectivity. This is a recording by Philoprax, Göteborgs Filosofiska Praktik, Gothenburg's Philosophical Practice. You'll find this and other podcasts on philoprax.com, that's philoprax.com, where you can also find articles and events if you happen to be on the west coast of Sweden.